Welcome in. Thanks for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. I'm Eric Pfeiffer, and I'm joined by Steve Howell, policy guy with the Indiana Corn Growers Association and Indiana Soybean Alliance, and a special guest today, and in fact, I believe it's our first federal legislator to join us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, joining us here in White County, Brookston today, Congressman Jim Baird. Congressman, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. We really appreciate you joining us and coming into town. And I know it's recess time, and you get a chance to meet with some folks here and taking the time to join us here on the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thanks for having us, and thanks for the opportunity to be here. You know, I can't think of any place I'd rather be than right here in the heartland of America. The corn and soybeans all around us, and the people you have in this area, farmers and ranchers, that is really special to be a part of this.
And you know, you get to be on the House Ag Committee and talk agriculture quite a bit out there in DC, and now you get to come back here and do it too. And Steve, I know that it's special to have Congressman Baird here because you know, we had an event back on the 31st of July, and he wasn't able to be in town. He was doing some work out in DC then, but pretty big award. Why don't you explain what you had going on then, Steve?
Certainly. The Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee, along with the Indiana Corn Growers Association, has a Friend of Farmer Award. That's something that we don't take lightly when we make that award. That's reserved for policy leaders that are always with us, really leading on our issues, kind of going above and beyond. And, you know, this year, the award was granted to Congressman Jim Baird. When we were talking about it with our farmers, that they were just, well certainly, he's very deserving with the work that he's done on the farm bill. A number of our priorities are in the House version. Just being there as a leader, leading on letters of support, delegation letters, anything that, any message we need to get to the administration on our needs, he's right there. Oftentimes, he's there before we ask. He just understands our issues and very tuned in, takes it very seriously, really has a heart for agriculture. And you know, it's just a real honor to grant the award this year to Congressman Jim Baird.
And I know, Congressman, you know, this award, he mentioned they don't take it very lightly. They give it when it's deserved. Past recipients of this award, I know Ted McKinney, a recipient of this award, the late great Jackie Walorski, a recipient of this award, and now you. What does it mean to you to receive this award?
It means a great deal to me, and then it's a pleasure to join such a distinguished group of others as my predecessors in that award. Brings to mind how important agriculture is to our country and to the foundation of America, really. And so to be a part of that for me is very rewarding. And to have these two organizations recognize that is just unfathomable for me.
It's really been, you know, a pretty, I guess, long experience for you. I mean, your time in Congress, you've started working with these organizations well before your time out in D.C. I mean, you've been in this farm community for a long time, right?
Absolutely. I'm really a product of this part of Indiana as far as growing up in agriculture. Started out on a small general farm and then went to Purdue. But the people here really represent what I think is important for this country and what I think is important for agriculture. So I couldn't be any more satisfied with having this kind of recognition.
Let's talk some policy here, Jim. We've got some policy things happening that you have your hand in here. Like there's a lot happening in D.C. right now, and I think we probably need to start with this farm bill. Steve, I've got to ask you first, because we've got to go back here many, many farm bill discussions on this ag policy podcast. Are you still optimistic that a farm bill gets done this year?
You know, somebody probably should be, so I'll take that I'll take on that role. And my explanation is the reason it's been stalled is because of politics. And as we've seen over the past couple of weeks, politics can change pretty quickly.
Uh-huh.
And it could be that the politics in Washington change enough that the stars align and we can get something passed by the end of the year. Now, am I saying it's going to happen? No, but I still think there's that possibility. So I'll be the optimist, maybe the last one standing.
That's not me. I am the pessimist here. I think that there aren't enough working days to get anything done. Speaking with Senator Braun the other morning out at the state fair, he just flat out said, I think that we might be better off pushing this thing until next year because they're trying to get more farm in the farm bill, and he just doesn't think that's going to happen right now with what Senator Debbie Stabenow wants to get in there with her legacy and what she wants to put through the Senate. Obviously, we talked about the House has put their version through. You were a big part of that, Congressman. Where do you see things sitting right now with this farm bill? Is there a chance we get something done and finished here in 2024?
I think I'm going to go with Steve. I think that before the end of the year that we have the opportunity to do that. I know I talked to G.T. Thompson, the chairman of the Ag Committee, just before I left, and he was talking about the possibility of trying to get something done in September. You know, it expires at the end of September, and it really, really needs to be reauthorized by the end of the year for sure. But I'm optimistic. You have to be optimistic in order to keep moving forward, and so I hope the Senate will to have a change of heart, and maybe election and politics might have a factor in that, and in so doing, that they will present their version of the farm bill, and then we can reconcile that and get something done. The important thing that I see about that is how can farmers and ranchers make plans for 25 when we don't even, you know, the current farm bill is expiring. And how can they make the kind of plans that they need to make for some of the things that are afforded in the farm bill when we can't get it out of Congress?
And I think, you know, taking the trip out to D.C. with your organization, Steve, just a couple of short weeks ago, that was the message. Like, how are we supposed to plan? We're already starting to make purchases for next year, like now, and we don't have a way to plan for this. And you're right, Congressman. I mean, this is where farmers are at right now. They don't have a plan, and more so, the government can't plan beyond this. And I think that that's a problem. How do you run a successful business? How do you run a successful government if you're not allowed to plan?
I think you've just touched on something that may be a problem with our federal government. Is not, you know, we don't operate like a business. Like I should, in my opinion. And so that presents obstacles many times, like the situation we're in now. Wait till the last minute. I have a difficult time thinking that, my observation would be, you know, this happens every 5 years, and we wait till right up to the very end of the fifth year to really start making progress. And so here we are beyond the expiration date of the 2018 Farm Bill, and we're still talking about it. And I don't think that, if you need one thing in government, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, you didn't ask for it, and you didn't pay for it, so anyway. But my opinion is, the one thing that needs to be stable and consistent is government, so that you can do the planning and that sort of thing, and let the industries figure out how to move forward after they have a stable government. And so if I had one goal, it would be to make sure that we're consistent and providing the kind of information farmers and ranchers need to make their plans.
Amen. I think we would all take that at this point. That'd be a good goal. So logistically, how do you think we could make this work? Are we thinking that, you know, we probably need to extend again this existing farm bill, and then maybe, you know, once the elections happen, then we might have a chance of getting this farm bill done? Or do you really think there's a chance without an election swing that we might have a change of heart in the Senate and we could get a farm bill done?
I think there's constituents in the Senate that are farm-based folks that have an influence on the Senate and senators, and I think that could have a positive influence on getting something to move.
Okay. Well, we'll see what happens. It sounds like he's in your camp here, Steve. We might get something done. You're not the only one. You're not the only one. Congressman Baird is with you.
So as I've said, he's always with us, and a lot of times without even asking, he's right there in front, leading on our issues.
There we go. Let's talk about some of these issues in the farm bill that I know you've been championing. One real close to home, and I know that's been research. The land grant universities trying to get research dollars in this farm bill. That's something that you've just been harping on and wanting to get done. Very, very close to you, wanting to get these things done. Just talk about your passion for wanting to get more research dollars in this farm bill and wanting to get that done for Purdue and other land grant universities around the country.
Well, you know, I'm chairman of the Subcommittee on Conservation Research and Technology, and all of those areas really have an impact on the future of agriculture. I mean, and you said it correctly, research is really a passion of mine from the standpoint you make decisions and appropriate decisions based on research. And so if we can help fund land-grant universities and the research project, and we have funds in there to make sure we upgrade their facilities. You know, some of these facilities, the laboratories and so on, were built back in the 60s. So we want to make sure we can upgrade those facilities, that the young researchers that we can attract to the land grants, and Purdue University is a major factor in that. But if we can attract those young people by having the right kind of facilities and the instruments they need to conduct the very sophisticated research that they want to do now, then I think that's a real asset. And so if we're going to stay competitive in the world market, then we have to have the research. And you take some of our adversaries that are committing so many dollars to research compared to what we're doing. You know, research doesn't play in the forefront a lot of times in terms of the media, but it is such an important factor in our ability to be able to produce. That's why in this country we can produce more per acre than every year we do that, and that's because of research, and not only land grant university research, but also agribusiness and farmers themselves. You know, we've got very talented farmers and ranchers. We've got very talented people in the agribusiness industry. All of that combines to make sure we can produce more every year.
And you mentioned our adversaries. Let's not, you know, sugarcoat this. Let's not hide behind it. China has overcome. I mean, they've taken the lead in this research area, right? I mean, are they out in front of us now in this area? And really, we need to step up where we're at.
They are rapidly gaining on us. I will say this, that the quality of research, the quality of research that we do from our land grant universities, I think is very, very superior, or at least cutting edge. And if we can keep that research funded, we can maintain that. And so it's amazing if you had the opportunity to go through the national labs, to go through our land grant universities, and see the various projects that they're working on in terms of precision agriculture, in terms of biotechnology. All of that is significantly moving forward, and I think it'll help keep the United States ahead of our adversaries.
I guess I should say, from a dollar standpoint, you know,
yes.
They're committing a lot of dollars to this.
Yes.
So that's where we really need to try to keep up and keep things moving. So,
but could I say too, though, that we have the capability in this country, and I've said it many times, we produce quality products. I mean, I'm talking about corn, soybean, and all the other products that we produce. They're very high quality. And the Chinese people have had a taste of what we produce from this country, and that's improved their standard of living. Well, I'm talking about the citizens, not the leadership, not the CCP. They had a taste of that, and I think they're going to want to continue it because we have the ability in this country to deliver those products around the world and keep them in a high quality state.
Yeah. Let's talk about trade. I want to get your take on trade because I know that this administration in particular has taken some heat on trade. The lack of trade initiative, the lack of trade agreements. It was in the previous administration really all we talked about, trade constantly, and now we don't talk about it very much. What is your take on where we stand with trade and in particular agricultural trade? Have we been doing enough?
In my opinion, no, and that's one of the reasons that we put in the Farm Bill an increase in the MAP or the Market Access Program, as well as the Foreign Market Development, the FMD, both of which provide the opportunity for American agriculture to be introduced to other countries. And I'm talking about others, not only China, but which is really a double-edged sword in a way, from the standpoint there's so many people there that need high-quality food products, and yet what they're doing on the national stage kind of throws up some significant barriers. So that means that we need to develop other markets, other foreign markets that can use our products. And we can do that if we introduce our producers and our farmers directly to those people that need that kind of help in other countries. And I'm not talking about giving our products away. I'm talking about trade.
Yeah. One more thing, and I know, Congressman, we're running out of time with you. You've got other places to go, other people to see, and we do, again, appreciate our time with you today on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. We've touched on this before, Steve, on this podcast, the checkoff programs. And again, the checkoff is not a sponsor of this podcast because the checkoff doesn't play in the policy space. But let's not kid ourselves. The checkoff was created by policy. And there's been some policy put out there that, for lack of a better term, has attacked the checkoff programs. You've been there, and you've kind of been in a position to defend the checkoff programs. And Steve, you might have the numbers that are out there that say, you know, for every dollar spent, so much goes back. Every dollar invested. What are the numbers for soybean? I mean, what are they right
for
now?
For soybean, it's over $12 return on every dollar invested, and every checkoff can show that type of success. There's 20-some different commodity checkoff programs at the federal level. And remember, these are programs that were started by farmers or wanted by farmers. There was a need back in the 80s, primarily. Mm-hmm. We were losing markets. Times were tough. Nobody was building markets for us. Farmers came together and said, we need checkoff programs to promote our products. Farmers fought long and hard to get our checkoff programs. We're going to fight long and hard to defend them. There was an effort last fall that was going to be harmful to our checkoff programs. And I think it might have been 1:30 in the morning. Congressman Jim Baird was speaking against an amendment that would have harmed our checkoffs. At 1:30 in the morning, Jim Baird's up there fighting for Indiana farmers.
So, you know, again, your passion for agriculture and the checkoff, I mean, that's a pretty good place to be. And that's why you got that Friend of Farmer Award. I mean, what? Did it take Steve knocking down your door at 1 a.m. so you get out there at 1:30 to talk about it?
No, but he was watching. So yeah. Anyway, but it's a pleasure to represent folks like that. And you take the checkoff programs; they're farmer operated and managed. And so when you got that kind of input right from the field, it's very valuable.
When you take your background and everything else that leads into this, being on that House Ag Committee, do you have folks that come to you and are asking questions about the farm community? Is that Are you a resource for some of those folks with that background?
We are a resource, and you know, yes, I am a resource. I can say that. I think we have to educate people all the time. There's a constant dynamic of people changing. Not everyone, 1% of the people or population is actually involved in production agriculture. So I think those of us that are close and directly involved have to educate the rest of the population about what agriculture does and how important it is.
Congressman Jim Baird joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast. Any other issues before we let you go that you think folks that are listening right now need to be tuned in on? Anything that you're working on right now that folks need to know about before we let you go?
Just I think it's important to stay positive and take confidence in what agriculture is doing and the kind of foundation they provide for this country. And so take pride in that. I'm very proud of American agriculture, and I think those that are involved in it, especially those from Indiana, should feel the same.
We thank you very much for joining us on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, and we hope we get to do this again with you soon. This was fun. We enjoyed it very much. So thank you for joining us.
Same here. It's a pleasure to be here. I can't think of any place in the world I'd rather be than right here.
We're going to come back and we're going to talk about some local issues here with Steve when we come back here on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance.
The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is also made possible by Bex Hybrids and Indiana Farm Bureau. There is strength in numbers. That's why the Indiana Soybean Alliance membership and policy and Indiana Corn Growers Association need you. These organizations represent Indiana soybean and corn farmers on critical and regulatory issues affecting their industry. Along with support from the national organizations, National Corn Growers Association and American Soybean Association, the Indiana members help determine public policy positions on critical issues, including farm bills, trade policy, and ethanol and biodiesel legislation. Become a member of Indiana Soybean Alliance membership, Indiana Corn Growers Association, or both. Visit incornandsoy.org to select a membership. That's incornandsoy.org.
At Bex, we stand up for the things that matter most: our faith, our independence, and helping farmers succeed. As the largest family-owned seed company in the U.S., we believe in the integrity of remaining an independent family-owned seed company. Since our founding in 1937, we have continued to produce quality products backed by a quality family of employees and dealers dedicated to serving American farmers. And that's something to be proud of. Bex, founded in faith, forged in America. For more information, visit BexHybrids.com.
At Indiana Farm Bureau, we serve tree farmers, goat farmers, and in fact, all farmers. With over 250,000 members, Indiana Farm Bureau represents a broad range of farmers and puts power in your collective voice. You also get advice from our subject matter experts, more affordable health plan options, and support for youth programs statewide. So whether you grow soybeans or strawberries, membership means you'll be heard. Become a member today at infb.org.
Back on the Indiana Ag Policy Podcast, Eric Pfeiffer here, Steve Howell there from Indiana Corn and Soy. Great conversation there with Congressman Jim Baird. Really appreciate him coming on and talking through the farm bill issues, and hopefully we can get politics out of the way and we can actually get that thing passed. That would be nice. Believe me, I'd love to be wrong.
I would love for you to be wrong too, Eric.
It just doesn't happen very often, Steve. I just ask my wife. I would love to be wrong on this one. Let's talk through some other things happening here in the state. Shop Talk events happening with the Indiana Corn Growers Association, the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee. That's where we are today recording this with Congressman Baird. He just got done giving some comments to a pretty good crowd here in Brookston, Indiana at the Shop Talk event. And you've got some more on the way.
Yeah, you're right, Eric. We're right in the middle of our Shop Talk season. We do that typically through August. We have a series of meetings across the state for several reasons. The main reason is to meet with farmers and give them a policy update. The work that we're doing on behalf of them as members of the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee, the work that we do to advocate for their issues. We find that we got to meet farmers where they are, and we get out in their communities, host these meetings on farms in shop talks, hence the term shop talk series. So we finished up one here in White County today, and we have a few more coming up. August 15th is in Huntington County. August 26th, we'll be up in Marshall County. And then wrapping up this year's series is August 27th in Rush County. And if you want more information on those, if you have an interest in attending, incornsoy.org has the registration links for you to sign up and attend those meetings. And one thing that we've added last year, and we continue this year, is PARP offerings. If you need PARP credits for your pesticide application license, we've coordinated with Purdue Extension to offer those credits here at our shop talk. So come and enjoy a breakfast, get an update from your policy organizations, and then you can stay a little later and meet up with Purdue Extension to get your PARP credits.
And you are going through a lot of the policy updates, similar to what we talk about on this podcast. You're giving some in-person updates on property taxes, some of the water quantity issues that you're working through, and many of the other things that we're talking through on this particular podcast, an opportunity for folks to come and ask questions of you and other members of the policy team, and just kind of what's going on, right?
Yeah, we want to share with the farmers where we're spending our time on the issues to make impact. We are getting some movement on some things. Sometimes it's slow. But we've seen some policy successes. Our priorities are in the House version of the Farm Bill. That's a success. We're working with EPA to come up with some more workable mitigation measures under their herbicide strategy. We've seen some improvement there, more work to be done. But the advocacy that the farmers are doing is paying off. It's just sometimes slow. But we want to give them those updates and then hear from them what issues are impacting corn soybean farmers so we can be more successful.
And maybe you've been listening to this podcast and you're realizing, oh, my checkoff dollars aren't going toward this this policy stuff, and you're realizing that maybe you should become a member. There are people at these meetings that can answer your questions about membership and how you can get more involved. So be sure to show up at these Shop Talk events. They're great events. Your legislator might just show up at one of them as well that you can have a chat with. So be sure to, again, visit incornandsoy.org, and you can check those out. Also get a policy update. Another thing to keep in mind, next week at the Indiana State Fair, we're going to be hosting the Lieutenant Governor's Debate, big event on Tuesday the 13th. We're going to be live streaming, so if you can't make it there in person, be sure to check out the live stream at HoosierAgToday.com, on our YouTube channel, Facebook. If you can't find this thing, this is on you, okay? You're looking in the wrong places if you can't find this thing. Just search Hoosier Ag Today on Google. You should be able to find it, okay? 3 p.m., August 13th, we're going to be live streaming it. I'll be up there asking some questions. I'm not looking to give the questions away, but I can just about guarantee you there will be a question somewhere about property taxes. They better be prepared to answer.
Yes.
Because this is the top issue that will be asked of folks at the State House come January. So I would sure hope they come prepared to ask to answer questions about property taxes, if nothing else. So that's coming up on Tuesday. Be sure to join us at 3 p.m. There at the fairgrounds or on the live stream. And the folks at Indiana Corn and Soy are involved in sponsoring that event as well. So,
yeah, both the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Soybean Alliance Membership and Policy Committee are sponsoring that debate. We think it's important to have that discussion with these candidates to let them know where farmers stand on different issues. If they're going to lead the Department of Ag, they need to understand these issues, as well as their other work that they're responsible for as a lieutenant governor. We we want to have that conversation. So we really appreciate the Agri Institute for organizing this event, and we're proud sponsors.
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot happening in this space during the month of August, a lot of things happening. So we're excited about everything that's going on. We will get together, do another podcast here soon. And gosh, just so many things happen. We might have to do like six podcasts this month, Steve. I mean, we'll see. We've already seen each other more in August than I think we've seen each other in like the entire rest of the year. So you're getting your fill of me, I know.
Hey, it's great. We appreciate the work that you do to inform folks on what all is going on within the industry of agriculture and the importance of the farmers to step up, whether it's them stepping up personally to work on issues or becoming members, so we can do that on their behalf.
Yeah. We should also throw out a congratulations to Ed Ebert while we're here, getting the AgriVision Award this past week. So congratulations to Ed, and that's a big deal. The state's highest ag honor.
Yeah, it was great to see. Well deserved. Ed's just been a great member of our team, heading up our market development work. We're so fortunate to have him on our staff, working for farmers to get these global markets opened up for our products.
And John Baugh at Purdue University also winning that award. Saw him this morning at the Shop Talk event. He's been doing a lot of work in this policy space for many, many years. So congratulations to both of them. I told Ed when he got the award, I said, hey, congratulations. Now get back on the plane. Let's go. Get back to work. But no, good stuff happening here around the Indiana State Fair. And by the way, if you visit the State Fair, go check out the glass bar. So a lot of good stuff happening. All right. Thanks, Steve. And we'll be back. We'll do this Indiana Ag Policy Podcast again soon. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
The Indiana Ag Policy Podcast is presented by the Indiana Corn Growers Association and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. And it's also made possible by Beck's Hybrids and Indiana Farm Bureau. And is a production of Hoosier Ag Today, Indiana's Farm Network.